Regiment here, and you're listening to Travelling the Vortex.
My name is Stephen Thorne. Tangents ahead. Travelling the Vortex.
Travelling the Vortex.
All right, well, welcome back. This is our third update from, where are we at? Gallifrey 1, the big Doctor Who convention. And I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Mel.
I'm Chrissy.
And we want to tell you about our day. This is our first really kind of full day here as a team here. And what did you guys think of today?
Overwhelmed.
It was a lot of fun. Like, we were doing, I got to do cosplay today, which last night I wore it for a little while. I wore my costume. I was the fifth Doctor girl, or Femme Five, whatever they call it. And, I mean, I've never really cosplayed before. I just thought it would be fun. And I wore it last night a little while and during opening ceremonies, and it was just hot. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to wear this and, you know, all day and die. So I kind of toyed with the idea of not wearing it at all. And then I met up with a friend of mine who was dressed as a Femme 10. And she was all, you know, and I was telling her, oh, I've got this costume. Like, oh, you should go wear it. So I ran upstairs, changed, went back downstairs. And it was just so much fun that everybody would stop me and say, you know, say, oh, that's a really cool costume. Or you know, I want to take your picture. And so now I'm like on people's Twitter feeds and all those different things. And I actually got to be in, they had the cosplay hall, and somebody came in, we were standing in line to say hi to Daphne Ashbrook, and this girl, she was dressed up as the Master, and she's like, oh, we're doing this, she called it a royal flush, but it was this, it was actually, it was like a suit of cards in Doctor Who characters, and it was 2 through 10, and then you had Ace, and then Captain Jack was the Jack, and then Romana was the Queen, and then the Master was the King. And so we all just kind of stood in a line in front of this backdrop of the classic TARDIS. So they had the classic TARDIS and the David Tennant TARDIS backdrop, but we did the classic because that's what I was. And I got a picture with a Perry and a Tegan, which those are the only two cosplayers as the Fifth Doctor's companions. I've seen a lot of Fives. I haven't seen...
any Turlos.
No Turlos.
Yeah. No Turlos.
That would have been kind of cool.
I did see an Adric.
You did see an Adric.
I did see an Adric.
Okay.
Oh, that's too bad. And but I was kind of surprised that Mark Strickson is at this con and there's no Turlos. I thought that was kind of weird.
I've seen a bunch of Jamies, which that's great, but no Turlos. And I'm like, that's sad.
Well, there are two things here with this part of the story that I think are kind of cool. First of all, now Mel cosplayed for a little bit yesterday in her Happiness Patrol outfit, and we got stopped, I don't know, 20-something times, which is, you know, for Happiness Patrol, that's kind of a big deal, because people recognize that one. I mean, that's kind of an obscure little thing, and people stop, oh, wow, okay, cool. So that was kind of cool. But we went back in there and took pictures with her in front of the backdrop. So and Chrissy got us back in there today, and if you're not in costume, you don't get into that room, period. They just, that you don't get in. But because we were with people dressed up, we got into the room, which is kind of cool to be able to take those photos of them dressed up and see kind of what goes on in that chaos behind the scenes in the costuming department, which I think is pretty nifty. So it's kind of cool that we got to see that aspect of it.
Yeah. I did get a picture. Like yesterday, my big goal, I saw a bunch of people dressed up as there was the Delgado Master and the John Sim Master and the Ainley Master. I'm like, I need to find someone who's an Ainley Master and get a picture with them. And I did find somebody, and that was great. And the picture I got, I'm like grinning like an idiot, and he's smiling like, oh, I'm going to get into some kind of big trouble or something. So I was like, this is cool.
Was that the one I took?
That's the one you took, yeah.
Was that last night?
This was today.
Oh, okay.
I saw Masters yesterday, and I thought that would be cool if I got a picture, an Ainley Master.
Okay. Because I thought that happened today, but maybe everything's just running together.
No, it happened today. It happened today.
A lot of stuff's running together today.
It is, yeah.
So, well, why don't you two guys talk about the panels that you were in?
Yeah, well, the first panel we were on was
The Trial of the Time Lord.
I'm glad you said it, because I was about to say Gumego's War again, and I know that's not right. Trial of the Time Lord, and
all of the panels are named after episode titles, which on the surface makes absolutely no sense, because you look at the panel and you're like, I have no idea what this is about.
Yeah.
But then when you delve into the back and you look up the programming, it's like, oh, that kind of makes sense. So The Trial of the Time Lord was about the Doctor and his evolution as a character and the different personality traits that different actors have brought to it. We didn't stay on topic with that.
Well, I think we did, because I think, like we were saying earlier when we were talking off mic, it's a broad enough topic that I don't think we strayed off topic. I don't think the questions were directed the way that they probably should have gone for necessarily that panel. But I, everybody enjoyed it. That was what blew me away.
Who was asking those questions?
First of all, I come to opening ceremonies yesterday, and
yes,
my plane was late because we were delayed on the tarmac because we hit a bird. And so, well, we didn't. They hit a bird before I loaded the plane, but... anyway,
on the tarmac.
So I'm late. No, apparently it was in the air on the way. But we're sitting on the tarmac because they hit a bird. All right, and I get here and I sit down and I miss the primer panel, which is you go there and you kind of find out how to be on a panel. But Sean got to go to that, so he just was filling me in. So we're in the middle of watching Radio Free Scarrow and the Ambassadors of Death, which is the kind of the quasi kickoff to the whole convention. And Sean goes, "Oh yeah, by the way," and he flips for his book and he points. And it says, this is our panel, and next to my name is moderator. And so I'm like, oh, no. So he explains to me that they got there, and you said that some people came up and said, it says I'm moderator, and they didn't even know they were. So you flipped through hurriedly to make sure we weren't moderators.
That was moderators. What I cued into it, is because somebody commented, like, so you're on a panel, surprise. And everybody was like, yeah, I got an email. And half the room turned and went, oh, you got an email? Because we didn't until you'd said something. It was when Galley posted the official listings. That's how we found out.
Right,
we got no notification at all that this was happening. So then...
I saw it then.
Yeah. Well, we are too. And then in that particular thing when it said, you know, this is you just check and I found out I'm a moderator today. I'm safe. Oh, poor Glenn.
Yeah, so I go into this thing knowing that I'm going to have to kind of drive this panel, which I think I did a pretty good job at the beginning, and it kind of derailed from there. But no, I it was a lot of fun.
Much
and
like
I think
our podcast.
I think it was a lot of fun, and I hope we brought some intelligent conversation to that room. Here's the amazing thing is we get up there on this stage, and I had been glancing into and set in on a couple of panels, and there was... They weren't empty rooms, but they weren't full. Some of them were about half full. I think the one we sat on before ours was probably about two-thirds full.
Two-thirds full, yeah. And these are not... This is not the gargantuan...
No, there's not these big ballrooms.
Yeah.
No, these are... These are little convention rooms is what they
this
are.
This is a program A.
Right. They're little program rooms. And so we go up and sit on the stage, and because we're supposed to be there a few minutes early, so we go up and sit on the stage, and I see people filing in and filing in and filing in, and then entire room filled up, and there were still people they're coming in, and they were standing at the back of the room.
Yep.
And I thought, oh my gosh, what did we get into? So so we've got a room full of people. I mean, it was almost like they came there to see us. It was kind of cool.
Yep.
No, well, that's what I imagined.
And then Glenn looked out of the crowd and went, hi.
I did. I was like, wow, there's a lot of people here.
I recorded it. It was awesome.
So, and I welcomed everybody to Inspector Spacetime panel. And here's the funny thing is I did that. I wanted to open with a joke. And so I did that. I said, you know, welcome to Inspector Spacetime panel. Ha ha, no, just kidding. In that moment of welcome to Inspector Spacetime panel, I see out of the corner of my room the room guy that's in charge of making sure that we don't go over and all that stuff looking at me like, what? And so I had to hurriedly go, no, just kidding, you're in the right place, you know, that kind of thing. And he just kind of went, turned around and walked outside. So,
I'm sure,
think of that guy hard
I'm sure. I'm sure the galley staff, some of them were probably under a lot of stress, so he probably didn't add to their sense of well-being.
Because this guy's been managing lines all day long.
Yeah.
And here I am making a joke, and he's like pissed. But anyway, so no, I think that one went well. And actually, when I got in there, I thought, okay, I get to moderate, so I'm going to kind of ask some of the questions, and I don't have to really talk that much because I'm pretty good around the four of us, or you know, five of us, or whoever, behind a mic when I don't see the people. But I'm not really that great on stage in front of people. So, but I thought, okay, this will be good. I don't have to talk too much. You guys can do all the talking. Which our eighth doctor, John, who was on our panel, he was fantastic.
He was great.
Gosh, he
was
great stuff.
Excellent.
Really enjoyed him. But
John's hanging on my wall at home.
Yeah.
Is he the guy that
He's the guy that's in
The one I thought was a mannequin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. He kind of does look like a mannequin. I consider.
Yeah. When we were here last year, we got our picture with the TARDIS console, yep. And you could have an option of, do you want somebody with you or just by yourselves? And the other options were there's somebody dressed as the Master in his Time Lord regalia, and then there's a Grace. And it's like, if we're going to have anybody, I want the Eighth Doctor. Mm-hmm. And Mel kind of like, yeah, I want him too, because he looks so good in that. You know, I mean, he's got a great costume.
He was. Yeah. He looks fantastic.
He's wearing it again today. But so it was kind of cool. It's like, dude, you're hanging on my wall at home. And he goes, I don't think that's creepy.
Yeah.
I'm not stuffed. I was like, no, you're in our picture of the TARDIS console. He goes, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I went up to him afterward, and I asked him, like, do you have a blog or something? Because he had some really great ideas, and I'm like, I want to, like, see what else you have. And so he's a... What did he say? Oh, he does fan films on YouTube. I can't remember what they were, but I wrote it down so I can search it.
Keith will look this up, and we'll put the show notes.
It'll be in the show
okay.
notes.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I don't have to worry about this.
No, it's all Keith.
It's
all Keith's responsibility. But anyway, like how we volunteered you for that, Keith?
I felt like that panel went pretty good. Mm-hmm. I didn't. It's one thing to sit on stage and be in it, but did we do okay?
Yeah, I thought you guys did. I thought the whole thing was really good. Really good discussion, and people talked. They had comments from the audience, and there was one guy sitting right next to me in a Seventh Doctor outfit. He had a question, and I should have asked him what his question was, because I'm like, oh, I'll talk about it, but I didn't.
What I have decided from this, though, is when we record our podcast, to keep them on time, I'm going to have a guy standing outside the door, and he'll come in and tell me when it's 5 minutes, and then he'll come in and tell me when it's wrapped.
You have that now, and you don't pay any attention to it. You have that, you try to pay attention to it, and I go, I'm not paying any attention to Glenn, I'm not done with my point yet.
So then later in the afternoon...
Hold on one second. Now, while we were doing this, Mel was off doing autograph hunting, and who were you? You were hunting down somebody specific. I don't remember now what it was. Because you didn't come to the first panel, right?
No. I was... I don't know.
Well, she was getting autographs and bumpers, and I mean, she was hunting everything down for us.
She went and hunted down Stephen Thorne, and you got his.
Oh, that's right.
You got Omega's autograph.
Oh, yeah, and secured a little something special that hopefully we'll divulge later.
So yeah, Mel was a trooper because she was working for the Vortex.
She was Vortex PA.
I was getting autographs. Well, she's the first one.
She was also adding to her ribbon stash.
Yeah, she certainly was.
Yeah. No. Well. I got to talk about Freema standing, because we came back from breakfast, and I was like, well, what am I going to do till 11, because I wanted to go to your panel. I was like, what should I do? And I go into the dealer's room, and it's like, oh, Freema's here. So I go out and look for the line, and now they had it where they did this really cool thing, but I didn't realize it at the time. Is like the line went out the door and then it stopped. I'm like, oh, this must be the end, because there's actually somebody at the end of the line with one of those "this is the end of the line" signs. Like, oh, is this the line for Freema? And he's like, oh yeah, but you got to go out that way. So I look out by the door. I'm like, oh, okay. And I see a few people. So what they did is they like split it up so people can go down the hall and there's still a line, and then they just have somebody say, okay, you need four more, go that way. So I get back there, back to the door, and it winds out the door and kind of around the courtyard. Now, this was like 10 after 10. So I'm like, well, I'll stand in line and it should go pretty quick. Maybe, I hope. And so I get down back to the back of the line. And, I mean, there were things to do and people to see and, you know, talk to. And there was one guy, he had like a homemade Dalek. Or, you know, life-size Dalek made out of cardboard and styrofoam. It was like...
I didn't see that.
No, I got pictures of it. It was like a Halloween costume for his son a few years ago. And his son was there, and they were, like, putting it all together and getting the kid in there. And they were going around having people actually autograph the Dalek, which is pretty cool. So anyway, I got there at 10 after 10. By the time I got up to where Freema was to get my picture signed, it was 10:45. So I was only in line for like 35 minutes.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
No, especially for Freema. I thought, yeah. Oh, it's going to be like clear down the street. And no, it was great. And she was just sweet as all get out. So, and I did not make an idiot of myself today. I got three autographs. I got Freema, Mark Strickson, and Sylvester McCoy. And I was on my best behavior.
Maybe we should have warmed you up. Instead of sending you to Jamie first.
Yeah.
Well, she got it all out of the way.
That's true.
Yeah.
But so, Jamie's the one you wanted to get a shot.
Yes. I did. Now, if I can corner him like tomorrow or something, get just a picture with him, it'd be good.
So then in the afternoon we did, well, I had another panel, which was the, I don't know what that means. 15. Ah, I got you. Okay. So I had a Trial of the Time Lord panel. No, that was the one we already did. I had Evolution of the Daleks. That's just it. This one seems to be the most obvious, though. Evolution of the Daleks.
Because
what it was kind of the evolution of the Daleks through the series, through the entire run of the show. And I thought that was pretty good. And I think it was nice to have done the first panel because I think I was a little more relaxed and loosened up and was less afraid to talk in that one. So,
well, you weren't running it either.
Exactly, that's true. And I think that panel actually felt a lot better for me as far as conversationally because I think we stayed, I think, a little more on topic. I think we kind of strayed a little bit and probably went a different direction than probably was intended for that one as well. But I thought everybody on that panel was pretty good. The girls were they had a different approach. I don't want to say that they did bad because they didn't, but they had a different approach, and I thought that was kind of nice to have the variety on the panel perspectives on the Daleks and whatnot.
And that was a lot of fun. Mel, unfortunately, was off. She was in line. She decided she was going to jump in line. She wanted Ben Browder's autograph. Well, we both wanted Ben Browder's autograph, and they were already lining up for Ben Browder. That panel was at 2?
Yes.
Yep. And Ben Browder wasn't supposed to autograph until 3?
3.
And they were already in line. She's like, I'm going to be here. I was like, okay, I'm going to go listen to Glenn's thing. So then we got out of the... And that one's packed. You went to that one too, didn't you, Chrissy?
Yeah, I went to all of them.
That one was packed as well. Yeah. And standing room only. Mm-hmm. And people standing in the back. And you had a guest.
Yes. Oh, that was so cool. Now, they warned us. I don't know if you guys knew that.
No, they came up
and said, okay, the Dalek's going to come in about, 2 minutes or so into your panel, so when you guys get started. So, yeah, we had a heads up.
Well,
that it was
thank
coming,
God they warned you. Yeah, well, it was funny because you guys were talking about the Daleks, and I could hear it out in the hall, and I was just laughing because I'm like, hey, it's out in the hall, and you could hear it going exterminate and everything, and then it comes in the door, and we're just like, oh my gosh, it's the Dalek. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. So
but it was a nice surprise because that's
what
when we heard they were doing it, we thought, well, that'll
well,
be really
I'd,
cool.
Well, because I saw that Dalek. There were a couple other Daleks just kind of wandering up and down the hall. The Tiki Dalek.
The Tiki Dalek,
And I could, you hear them doing the voice and stuff. And like, oh my gosh, it's outside in the hall. So it was pretty cool. And then it would, react to, different things. Well, there were a couple of different jokes you guys, or a couple of different comments you guys would make, and then it would turn around and, glare at you.
It just kind of look at us.
It kind of look at you.
I didn't catch the first time until somebody kind of pointed over, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot you're here.
The first thing you guys said was something very complimentary to the Daleks. About the fact that they are scary, and the eye stalks nodding.
Yes.
And then you said something else about, well, these aren't scary because they can't do this. And it went, you wouldn't think a Dalek could glare. This thing glared. And we should throw out I don't remember, it's Nigel. It was his Dalek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it was Nigel's.
It was Nigel's Dalek. And Nigel, we met Nigel last year, Gally, and he's great. He's a lot of fun. But Nigel's got a very cool thing. I don't know if you noticed this from up there. Nigel brings a Dalek every year. And he has the guests sign the armor.
No. Remember what Nigel said? He goes, it wasn't his idea.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
It's just, he says, out of the blue, these stars, guest speakers, whatever, just sign it. And they think it's really cool to sign on these plates. I have to replace every single one of them. Every year, he says.
Every year, apparently, yes. But they do. They had signatures of everybody that had been there so far.
That's actually pretty cool, though.
On the armor plating, and then apparently he has to go and replace them.
Does he keep the armor plating?
Oh, yeah.
He didn't seem put off by it, but it was just like, it wasn't his idea. And he says, but I have to replace every single one of them.
I guess Daleks that, you want to go up and sign aren't that scary.
Yeah.
Brent, they mentioned special weapons Dalek in the panel, so I was happy.
They did. I applauded, too.
Yeah, I did.
That was a good one.
I was happy with that.
I was really surprised. That was something that surprised me, is that the mix of people at the first panel we did, the Travel Time Lord, was fairly... I think it was most of the crowd had been introduced to through New Who, but had gone back and started watching some old Who. Your panel was, I don't know, probably 90%, if not more, New Who fans that didn't have that backstory. Because when they're talking about some of the classic Dalek episodes, we talked about...
The Chase?
Thank you.
Power of the Daleks.
Start throwing them out, because I don't remember any of them now.
Day of the Daleks.
Day of the Daleks. Death of the Daleks. The Chase. The Power of the Daleks. The R one that I can't ever...
Remembrance, Reverence, Reverence.
Revelation.
Reverence of the... I just came up with another one.
They're asking, yeah, have you guys seen these? And only like four hands went.
Yeah.
Well, who was it?
Really?
I can't remember who it was, but they... Maybe it wasn't in that panel, but somebody was saying we get like Revelation of the Daleks was a really underrated story,
yeah,
and he made like a couple different comments. I'm like, now I want to go back and watch that again because I've only seen it once with when you guys reviewed it. But I was just like, oh my gosh, that's a different. I like that. I like whatever his interpretation was. Now I can't even remember it, but I just remember sitting there going, I really like how you were talking about how, you know, maybe dark it was,
well,
and not,
yeah,
so.
His point was that everybody talks about, you know, Colin Baker was the guy that ran around in the clown suit and was,
yeah,
everybody makes fun of it. But that particular Dalek story is the darkest Dalek story that there really exists in the run,
yeah,
of the story.
That's what it
so,
was.
Yeah, I thought the same thing as, you know, when he pointed that out, I thought, yeah, it really is. And I did, I even did that too. I thought, you know, that's one I really need to go back and watch again because,
mm-hmm,
even though we've just even recently reviewed it, it's just.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those ones that it takes a different turn on,
yeah,
on the story, on the Dalek story, and kind of has some,
yeah,
really dark elements to it. So.
And it's funny because like Resurrection of the Daleks and Remembrance of the Daleks, you everybody knows that those are dark stories, like high body count and,
yeah,
and,
yes,
and the Doctor,
yes,
goes to a really not a dark place, but a place you don't usually see him
uncharacteristic
go,
for the Doctor,
yeah. But then in Revelation, I mean, he does the same thing pretty much, but nobody really talks about it because it's Colin Baker and he's in the goofy coat.
Right, exactly.
And it's kind of unfair. So I was like, you know what, I really got
to
go back and watch that,
well,
with that in mind.
That one.
Yeah.
Real quick, backflash. The first panel, the guy, did you, I thought I could feel you on my end of the table squeeing when he was talking about how to canonize Peter Cushing.
Yes.
No.
Oh, that was
good.
It was John. John brought that up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't his idea. He
no,
said
he
talked to somebody earlier in the day or like yesterday about the, yeah, that was cool.
Do you want to tell
him? You'll probably do a better job than I did, but the idea is that the 10th Doctor that was the 10.5 as he called him, that was left with Rose in the alternate universe at the end of, that's not Parting Ways. What's the
Journey's End?
Journey's End. No, it's not Journey's End.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
No, Journey's End is the.
No,
oh, yes, it
no,
is Journey's End.
Journey's End.
No, that's at the end of Donna's season. Oh, yeah, that's
Donna's
the one.
Season.
Yeah. At the end of Journey's End, the 10.5 that gets left behind is Cushing's Doctor. And that's that he becomes, he grows old because he can now, and he has children. And so it would make sense that he would call one of them Barbara because he traveled with Barbara and thought that would be honorable to give her the name. And one of them is Susan. And so he traveled. Yeah, he traveled with his granddaughter. His name was Susan, so that she's named after her. And that, and it just, I went, blew my mind. I was like, that is so cool.
Yeah. And the funny thing was, someone else was like, well, they don't have this and this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, he's in an alternate universe. You can do anything
with
that.
They said, well, how come it's set in the 1960s? And I wanted to say, I defy you to find a place in the film where they tell you what year it is.
Yeah. I don't think they do.
No.
That's one of the great things. We haven't got to those yet. Mel's kind of sitting here staring off in space. But
well, obviously takes place in 2050.
Yeah, one's 2150. I haven't seen either of those anyway, but I know what you're talking about.
There are two Peter Cushing movies where Peter Cushing plays the Doctor, but he's human. I mean, he's just an inventor.
And his name actually is Doctor Who.
And his name actually is
Doctor
Who. There's a lot of things wrong
with
his story.
And it's Susan Who and Barbara Who and, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, so he's not a Time Lord. He just invented this TARDIS. But if we're using this and we go by the deleted scene where
David Tennant's
Doctor gives the other one, 10.5, a piece of the TARDIS and says, they're grown, you can grow your own TARDIS, then that would make sense that he still, you know, built this time machine and could do all these wonderful
brilliant
things.
And
so it's a really cool idea, I think, to kind of help bring those into the fold. Even though it's still alternate universe, I don't care. It kind of helps. Now if we can figure out Shaka Doctor.
Yeah. Still working on it.
Okay.
Well, that Eighth Doctor novel. Can't remember what it's called.
The one where he looks into the mirror. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, and he sees all these different
versions
of what could have been
yeah,
sort of thing. So I accept it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because even Curse of Fatal Doctors get included in that as well. So
it all works out, guys.
But then later on, I didn't do much between except for just get a few autographs and whatnot. But next big thing was probably your panel then, right?
Yeah, we did get wet when we came out of the Dalek panel. I walked past Mel. I was like, "So you ready to go do something else?" And she's kind of looking at me, going, "I'm still in line."
Oh,
still?
Yeah. Oh,
you're still. Yeah, he doesn't start until 3 something, and I think it was 3:30.
It was 3:30 because Ben Browder had he was on a panel. His panel didn't get out until 3:00, so I'm not quite sure why they thought they should do his autograph session at 3. But by the time his handlers, I mean, because that's kind of rude of a, you know, star or guest speaker or whatever you call them, to go from one place to another and not have a break in between. So they gave him, they let him have a break.
Let him have a break.
So by the time he got in there and got the doors, well, I mean, Ben Browder wasn't the only one in there either.
Yeah, no, the autograph.
He was sitting in a room with.
Well, we had Neve Campbell. We had Lisa Bowerman.
McIntosh.
Campbell.
That's Neve Campbell.
Yeah.
Me,
I knew where I went with that one.
Judy was in.
The costume designer was in there. Philip Hinchcliffe was in there. Get his autograph. And I'm squeeing. You can't hear me on the radio, but I'm squeeing.
He's jumping up and down. Butt cheeks. Yes.
How much was all in that?
But
free.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Browder wasn't, but everybody else
was free.
Now, I mean, you could, they have the directors in there as well. It's like, they had photos of, there's kind of like that one that I've got, that behind the scenes one. If you wanted the photo, you had to pay for it.
Right, right.
Because obviously they have to pay for those photos. But if it's just, hey, can you sign my program book or something like that? And off you go.
Awesome.
Yep.
I had Philip Hinchcliffe, and I told him, I was like, you are directly responsible for what is, you know, still one of my
Seeds
favorite
of
seasons
Doom.
Of Doctor Who, and that's got Terror of the Zygons. And he asked, well, which one? I was like, I'm fuzzy with the numbers, but it's got Terror of the Zygons, it's got Bram Morbius, and it's got Seeds of Doom, which is probably my all-time favorite show, and, you know, he was not. So it was cool to get to talk to him for a little bit. And then we got Ben Browder's autograph.
It was set up in like a U-shape to where you start at one point, and then you went around the horseshoe and out, and Ben Browder was the last one on the sign, and he had two handlers. One to give you a ticket to mark down how many pieces that you were getting autographed, because if you presented more, you weren't going to get more. And he was the most expensive one that I had to pay for. We paid $40 for him. So,
wow.
Yeah, Freeman was $30. He and was 40. We were standing in line with a couple who, it was so funny because this older couple, she was like, I know him from Farscape, but then he moved over to Stargate, and so I can't figure out which one I want. And then the guy, one of the staff workers, came out and said, he's charging $40 for whatever you sign, whether it be Farscape, whether it be Stargate, whether it be your own, whatever you want, $40 pop. And she's like, ugh. I'm not paying $80. And I was like, look what I got. And I whipped out my picture, and I had combined his two Farscape and his Stargate pictures and put them on one. She goes, I want one. I was like, I only have this one, lady. This is mine.
Forward thinking.
We think next year we're going to, we're going to start developing our own. I'm going to let Mel go nuts on the Photoshop, and then we'll set up a shop in the dealer's room
there
and sell our own photos.
She was totally
paying for the trip. Paying for the trip.
She was totally willing to buy my photograph of me. I said, no, it's mine.
Well, next year you'll know.
Yeah.
So we'll put a couple extra and see what we can do.
Yeah, so by the time we got in to get his autograph,
well,
it was 3:30.
Yeah, because while we were, I don't know, in one of the panels or whatever else we were doing, because you also did Martha earlier today. You stood in that line.
Oh, that's what I did earlier.
That's right. Yeah.
That's what I did with your guys' first panel, or your together panel, was Martha, because it took me.
You didn't get the half hour. You got
I got an hour and 15 minutes.
Well,
wait for hers.
I got there right after it opened, so.
Yeah, see, I think you were in the front of the line. I was in the back of the line. Because I was out on the sidewalk, I think.
So then the next big thing would have been the Good Man Goes to War panel, which we didn't have nearly the crowd that the other two pulled in. But
guess who you were going up against?
We were scheduled opposite Sylvester McCoy, who was in the main programming room A. So we were still, I don't know, what, probably half full?
Half full, yeah.
Half full.
So, which is impressive.
Which is still impressive for that.
Going up against Sylvester McCoy, it's very impressive.
Yeah.
And it was moderated by Chip from over at 2 Minute Time Lord.
He did a great job.
He was awesome.
He's done this before.
This is not Chip's first rodeo.
No.
He moderated the podcaster panel that I went to last year.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I kind of knew what to expect from him, and he did a normal great job. And apparently he didn't mind sitting on a panel with me, because he said I did a good job afterwards. So.
Even after you ran up and hugged him on
Even after I ran up and hugged him.
Did he remember it was you?
I'm sure he did.
Oh, yeah. I know, Sean.
Well, because I tweeted. It was like, I think I creeped him out. Sorry, Chip. And he replied, don't worry about
it. So how'd the panel go? Pretty good?
The panel went pretty good. We had, Chip being the moderator never really came down and put his official stamp on which end of the spectrum he came down on. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen to his podcast. I think he's a pretty big fan of the way Moffat's doing things.
Oh, yeah. I think that was evident in the way he talked.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know he's like, him and his wife are really big into the Russell T. Davies era, but he's been really fair to Stephen Moffat, which I appreciate. I appreciate a lot, because there's some RTD fans who are just like, no, you can't do Moffat at all. So
yeah. We had one guy who was supposed to have been the devil's advocate, but I don't think he really got the opportunity to kind of present his argument. So I'm looking for it. I gave him my email address and told him after Galley was over to kind of send me his dissertation, because I'd be interested in reading
it. He was the fantasy writer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting cross section on that panel, because it had you and the other guy who were like kind of the fanboys, and then then Chip was moderating, and then there was the one lady she's like kind of in the industry, and then you know about show running and producing, and you know getting ratings and getting budgets and all that kind of stuff. So she brought that in, and then there was the fantasy writer guy who was supposed to be devil's advocate, and I'm like, you know, that's a really good cross section of people to discuss something like this.
And Madman with a Box podcast. I can't remember his name either. But he was the fanboy, the other fanboy, so to speak.
Yeah.
But one of the more interesting, I mean, we talked a lot. We talked about the romance elements and how they're different. And is Moffat's era darker than what has come before? And is it more fairy tale? And how does he write female characters? That came up. And so, you know, we talked about a lot of different things. But I think probably the most interesting question was the last one that Chip asked me. And I was not prepared for this at all. He says, lightning round. Is Moffat a better writer or showrunner?
Right.
We'll start down here with Sean. I was like, I need some time. That's the other thing I've discovered with panels. Your position in the Dalek panel, you were on the left end of the table. Start there, man. If you get to pick your seat, you pick that seat every single time.
Because they always go right.
They go right to left.
They go
and
right.
You get more time to think about stuff. That right hand seat's tough.
Well, you'd think so. Because that's where you sat in our first panel, was at that end of the table that I did. And we went that way and did it. We did the introductions, and my panel, he said, we'll start down at that end. And my first thought was, who am I? So when they start with it, you're absolutely right. That's just
okay. Maybe it's just sitting in the middle somewhere. It's like a roller coaster. Pick an end.
Yeah.
But, I didn't really have any time to think about it. I went with Ryder. I think don't get me wrong, I think he's an amazing showrunner, but, you know, I think when he's got the show-running responsibilities. He's got so much other stuff on his plate, which he loves. Moffat thrives on that stuff. But I think when he's able to just sit down and all he has to do is write an episode, that's the job, write a good episode, I think he comes to it a little bit better. What's interesting is the fanboys, we both said the same thing. We both said, yeah, better writer. The other two, the industry people, were both, he's a better showrunner than he is a writer because of this, and this. And she brought up some very valid points, I thought, that, you know, the showrunner's job is to put out a good product, to increase your viewership, to expand and get bigger budgets, to tell bigger stories. Moffat's done that. He just down the line, boom, boom, boom. It's like, well, I can't argue with that. He's done, you know.
Yeah, and this is kind of my understanding, because I started watching the show in 2010, and that's when Moffat was writing. But I started with Eccleston and all that. But, I mean, it doesn't really seem like Doctor Who was around, especially in the United States, very much until 2010, until Moffat was kind of, and like now you've got BBC America doing all what they're doing in space and all this other stuff. So it kind of seems like, and a lot of people are coming to Doctor Who with Matt Smith and Stephen Moffat. So I think, you know, in that sense, I can definitely see where they're coming from that he's a better showrunner because, and at the same time, Russell T. Davies, he had a different job to do. He had a job of bringing the show back.
Yeah.
And they had to start, you know, in Britain and, you know, with the fan base that was already there. And, you know, these are the people who grew up with it. And now they want to introduce their kids to it and that kind of thing. So he had a different... So I think it's a different job each step along the way.
It certainly has.
Well, it's for the same reason that I think, you know, our generation remembers Tom Baker being, you know, the height of Doctor Who. I don't know how much of it you can really attribute to Tom Baker or Philip Hinchcliffe or
Barry Letts
or Bob or, you know, or any of those necessarily people that were involved in it, because it just happened to be that was the time when Lionheart, which was the name of the company that was BBC in America,
started distributing it
over here. Mm-hmm. So that's when it really got that exposure. I think had it gotten that exposure with
Hartnell.
With William Hartnell. Maybe mm-hmm. it would have been much bigger over here from the get-go. If it had gotten that exposure with John Pertwee, maybe it would have. So it's kind of that lightning rod effect.
Yeah.
That you just happen to have the perfect storm mm-hmm. of this conflux of the great show writer, the great doctor, the great this, and then the marketing arm is in full swing where you get that going. And we talked about this once, that Doctor Who right now is kind of on the biggest cusp it's been since Baker. And yeah. I think it's eclipsed that far and away
absolutely.
By now.
Absolutely.
But it's just, I don't know how much of that you can necessarily attribute to so-and-so. But the flip side is also true. There were so many other factors at work during John Nathan Turner's era to bring the show down and get mm-hmm. it off the air. But he takes the brunt for a lot of that. It's just kind of like, it's like a football coach. You
yeah.
have a good season, you get all the praise. You have a bad season, you get all the blame. Mm-hmm. So...
Now, I know this is your panel, you went and talked on it, but there were a couple of comments that I just visibly rolled my eyes. I don't know if you saw me down there.
Did you see the ones I was rolling my eyes on?
Yeah. Okay. And now that I just want to take this opportunity, because I'm here, I got the microphone in front of me. I'm probably going to piss some people off, but I don't care. If it's okay with you guys.
Take it.
I'm taking it. Okay. People who get so mad about how Moffat writes his female characters, and he's sexist, and he's misogynist, and all this other stuff. Okay. I'm taking it because I'm female, because some people, they dismiss it when a guy talks about it. I do not have a problem with the way Moffat writes his female characters. I don't have a problem... This is what I have a problem with. I have a problem with people who say, you got to write your female characters this way because they're female. You have to treat them special. You have to treat them different than the other characters because they're female. They need special preferential treatment. We have to make them, you know, big and strong and tough. And we can't, you know, you can't have a mom. You can't have a sister. You can't have a wife because that's just demeaning. And I'm like, it drives me crazy. And I'm like, can't you treat Amy Pond as a person, as an individual, someone who has had a life? She, you know, she's growing up, and she, you know, she has an imaginary friend, and she grows up, and she, you know, has to go to these psychiatrists and because her parents or whatever, and then she grows up and finds her imaginary friend. It has nothing to do with being female, okay? It just she's just a person, and I'm going off on all this because it just drives me crazy. Drives me crazy when they all say, Moffat's such a misogynist pig because he puts her in these short skirts and makes her, you know, the greatest thing is being a mother and a wife. And I'm just like, get over it. Honestly. Because that's the life she's chosen. She can make her own decisions. She can make her own choices just because they're not the ones you would have picked. So...
I think it's interesting because they're
amen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
First of all, I
now take
that.
A breath. Take a breath. I told you I get mad about this, and I get mad when they all say, well, like with you guys, when you say that, and they're like, well, people are like, or not just you guys, there's other people they get about this too. Like, well, you can't say that because you're a man and you're this. And I'm just like, enough with that. Please, just
well,
done.
Well, Mel's sitting here nodding her head too.
Yeah. Mel.
No, not at all. And the lady on the panel justifiably said, she says, I don't think he's sexist because of the fact that the female characters in his stories have a role, they have a plot, they mm-hmm. have story, they have background, and they don't put up with this.
Yeah.
You know, they give. Sorry.
Fine.
They give the doctor. They give.
What's that?
You know, the doctor his own.
Yeah, they do, and it's. I mean, and it's not just Amy that they carp about. It's, you know, the mom in Dr. Widow in the Wardrobe, and it's, you know, Abigail, that she's just, you know, she's just the pretty lady who sings. And I'm like, you know what, they have more personality than that. And I think Moffat, with his characters, I think he's more interested in telling a story than he is in investing in his characters. And the same thing with Rory and some of the other male characters is that too. And he's more, and not that he's not interested in developing characters, but I think he's more interested in developing story, whereas RTD was more interested in developing characters, whether they're male, female, whatever. And then the story came after. So I think that kind of contrast with that.
It's really an interesting flip, because throughout the Russell T. Davies era, the stories with the companions were very family orientated.
Yeah.
Rose had her family. We had to keep coming back mm-hmm. to Earth because we've got Jackie and eventually Pete and Mickey, and we've got that, mm-hmm. that support group for Rose. Martha, we get introduced to her family and her sister and everything in the first episode. Donna, we get introduced to Grandpa Wilf before we get introduced to anybody else. I mean, mm-hmm. we didn't know that at the time, but, you know.
Yeah.
So each one of the companions throughout RTD's era has their own support group mm-hmm. that we come to know. And then Moffat takes over, and we get a different kind of setup. We get Amy, who doesn't have that. She doesn't have that support group. She doesn't have that family.
Well, you don't ever see your, you don't see your parents till the end of season 5.
Now, we find out through the course of these events that, yes, in fact, she does have that, but because of these, you know, events, mm-hmm. that they're not there now. What I think is really interesting is that all of RTD's era is about the companions and their families and how their lives are uprooted mm-hmm. by the arrival of the Doctor, the interference of the Doctor. The Moffat era has been about the Doctor being in search of a family. It's almost like he was influenced by all this stuff that he's mm-hmm. kind of like, I'd like to have that.
Yeah.
And doesn't. And he finds it through Amy and Rory. And so it's a complete flip. Now, the one area that I will give these people a little bit of credence in is River. I still don't think we've gotten the... And this is something we didn't talk about on the panel, because everybody kept saying, we'll get to River, and then we never did. I would like to see a little bit more on River, because I feel the season 6 arc of her story and figuring out who she is, to me, still doesn't feel finished.
Right.
It very much feels like we just ran out of time. Mm-hmm. So this is all you're going to get on it. I don't like the fact that we kind of left it with her being a psychopath. And it's a great joke. It's a great one-liner that she herself has brought up, that, well, there's only room for one of us in the TARDIS with these personalities and whatnot. But I can understand why people get a little harpy about that, that of all the people, you know, the this would be the one that they would kind of go off on, so...
Well, I feel like we just got an extension of today's panel, so now
sorry,
I feel like I've been
there. Didn't...
Well, yeah. Now, what were you doing while we were doing well, this?
That's an interesting question, because I went to where everybody else at this convention was.
Well, see,
but now I feel
missed...
like I've been on your panel.
You've been on
the panel. Yeah. So people that missed the panel because they were at what Glenn's going to talk about, now they feel like they've been there, so there.
I'm going to wrap it up by talking about what I think was one of the most interesting things at the Doctor Who convention. No offense. Gallifrey.
You've got to talk about the one afterwards.
Oh, yeah. Well, quickly, we'll touch on that as well, because that was phenomenal. I went to see Sylvester McCoy do his Q&A session, and moderated by Nicholas Briggs and Barnaby Edwards.
Yes.
Which was fantastic. But those guys had very little to do with it, because Sylvester McCoy immediately takes the microphone, hops down off the stage, and I've seen him do this in other conventions in video, and goes all over the audience from one end to the other, asking, you know, holding the mic out, letting people ask questions, and the man is incredible. He went all over, and he's so funny and witty, and they had... I wish I could remember some... It's all muddled in my brain now, but I wish I could remember some of the great questions. But one of the things I thought was interesting was one girl said, "Can I ask 3 questions?" And he said, "Well, okay." And so her first question was, in Doctor Who the movie, did you, when you were transforming into the Eighth Doctor, was that all your face, or was that, you know, they do that in special effects? And he says, "Oh, no, that was all my face." And he said, "I went..." And he did this wonderful thing where he was like making it look like he was doing the transformation thing, which was absolutely hilarious. But the second question that cued me into, this might be the same girl as last year, she goes, "And I notice Eric Roberts isn't here. Is he dressing for the occasion?" And of course, the entire room explodes in laughter. And Sylvester McCoy looks at her and goes, "I don't think I got that." Because he wasn't here though. He wasn't there last year. And so, of course, nobody explained. And then the third thing she said is, "Can I have a hug?" And so she gave him a hug. And that, so that was really neat. He was so personable. He went up, he answered all his questions. Little kids would come up. One kid asked, you know, I was so amazed with these kids in this room. "What was your favorite book when you were growing up?" I mean, they're asking him all these really questions, you know, not personal, but things that you don't think about as an adult, because we're all going, fanboy, we're going to ask you about this. And, of course, just, you know, "What was your favorite book growing up?" He talked about reading Mark Twain and how he loved it. And one kid asked him what was his favorite thing to do when he was a kid. And he talked about climbing up in... a willow tree, because he loved to climb trees, and he had this one willow tree that had knots in it that you could climb up and you could actually like look down. He said, "I'd read books up there and look." So it was such an interesting thing, and the man
had stories that you don't get
exactly. You don't get those at conventions, and it was so much fun that he involved everybody. And one kid asked if, or it was a younger girl, asked if she could have a picture, and he says, "But if I did that, everybody here would want a picture." But then he ended up giving her a picture. So he was very personal, ran all over the room. And Nicholas Briggs and Barnaby Edwards, they really just kind of lost control of the whole thing. But the funny thing was, every once in a while, they'd reel him back in, and Sylvester would remember why he was there. And he'd go, are there any big Finnish questions? And so they would, you know, every once in a while, reel in and ask a few big Finnish questions. But, I mean, he covered everything from doing The Hobbit, from some of the other projects he'd done before. He actually, Nicholas Briggs actually set him up with this one, is I guess apparently he did, he is the first, I'm going to say this word, this isn't bad, he is the first person to break the penis barrier. Because Nicholas Briggs brought up the fact that there was a stage play that he did, and he actually came out nude on stage, completely stark naked on stage. And of course, he says, "Oh, you would have to bring that up." But so he explained it that he was doing this thing where because he's a circus performer, kind of a magician type thing, you know, an escape artist. All he's got a gig that he did back in the day, and apparently he used to like. They would bound him up and he would have to escape from like all of these, you know, chains and straitjacket and everything. And he would come out, and when he was done, he would come out, he'd be in his skivvies. Well, he thought, you know, back in the 60s, that was the thing, is when you were on stage, you kind of came out naked and it was a free thing. And they hadn't really done it in the UK yet. And so this time when he came out, he was stark naked. and so he apparently holds the record for breaking the penis barrier in the UK. He also talked about Doctor Who, when they shot, he said, we've shot twice, we've shot... and I can't remember, there's some sandy hot area that's a quarry, and they've only shot there twice, and one of them was Greatest Show of the Galaxy, and the other one was Survival. They shot some of the scenes in Survival, and he talked about one of the cat girl extras, how he said it was just so hot there, and he said, I'm in a jumper, and I'm sweating, and it's terrible, and there's all these gals in there in their cat makeup, and they're just sweltering hot. He said there was this one girl, and she tore, you know, all of her makeup off her face, and she tore all of her clothes off all the way down, and she ran up off over a dune, and we never saw from her again. He said, but really, that what was really cool about that is she didn't realize she was, when she was done, she was only in a thong. So he tells this story. So then he goes on and answer question. And the lady stands up and says, what was your favorite moment in...
Survival?
In shooting Doctor Who, the whole time that you're a doctor. And he goes, I already told you. It was the gal in the thong. So it was little things like that. It was so much fun. And to wrap it up real quick, the other thing that they did...
On. Now, what did you say to me? You got that. Now, he's trying very hard. This is awesome, and I'm very envious. He's trying very hard not to rub this in, but he comes and meets us after the panel, and he's like, I tried to record some of it. I got like 15 minutes. My battery died, blah, blah, blah. Dude, you should have been there. It was awesome. McCoy was phenomenal. I'm not going to rub it in, but...
He's now possibly my favorite doctor. I so much more have an appreciation for Sylvester McCoy just because of the person he is now. The personality he has, and the way he comes across to you. He is a wonderful man, and he's a consummate performer. I mean, that's what he's doing, is he's there entertaining, and it's obvious that he enjoys what he's doing, and it's obvious that he enjoys the fans. And that impressed me most about
Sylvester McCoy. Well, the movie
Sylvester
that you were
McCoy.
Talking about, Survival, we watched the extras, and it's so funny because, I don't know, they were trying to get a scene together or something in the extra, and Sylvester McCoy starts jumping up and down and screaming. On set.
It's the scene where all the chaos erupts and everything's going
oh,
nuts.
Oh, yeah, I watched that too.
He's yelling at people. He's like, will you stop with it? You're exciting them. And it's supposed to be this big kind of comedic moment with all the just...
Everybody's running in its chaos, yeah.
Well, he took it one step further, and he takes off the coat, and he throws it on the ground, and he throws the hat down, and he's stomping up and down, just throwing a tantrum. Just throwing an absolute temper tantrum on this.
And he
but
said,
it's not real. It's all him performing.
It's all part of the gag for him. And if that's one of those things. I don't know how I knew this. I just knew... That you watch Sylvester McCoy, and he's one of those what you see is what you get.
Yes.
This is this guy. Yes. I don't know how I knew that. I just knew that. And as soon as I saw him in the hallway and got that, Sylvester McCoy's over there. I don't know why. Now that you've seen it, I don't think you'll be able to ever watch another Sylvester McCoy story without cueing into that. And that's when I say Sylvester McCoy runs a very close second as my favorite doctor of all time. I think that's why, because for whatever reason, I latched onto that part of that personality through the TV.
It won't matter now how bad the stories are that he's in, because they're still poorly written. I recognize
that.
There
are. There's some bad
but ones. I and I had already become sort of more appreciative of McCoy just watching the episode, his stories over again. But I will now go to them with more of a just a warm feeling for that actor, and because of what he did today was. The other thing quickly that they did during this is because Nicholas Briggs and
Barnaby
Edwards was there, is we got to see, I believe they did this before they posted it on Facebook, I believe we got to be the first to get the
trailer.
Doctor Who trailer, for, or the Big Finish trailer for, what's the name of the story?
The Light at the End.
The Light at the End.
The big 50th anniversary.
And it accompanied with, it's an audio trailer, but it accompanies with clips, and you see the face of each doctor come up, so you know who's talking. It's clear to those of us that listen to the audios and know distinctly the voices. But it really gave me goosebumps, and I'm very excited.
It's supposed to be all eight.
It's all eight doctors.
All eight
including
original doctors.
William Hartnell, Patrick Troughton, and John Pertwee. Everybody's in there, and I literally every time one of them would speak, it was most of the audio is excuse me, Davison, McCoy, and Colin Baker, because they've been doing this for a long time. Oh, and Paul McGann as well, and I heard some peripheral. Charlie heard, I think I heard Nisa, I heard some of the companions as well, but so, it wasn't until you've never heard this. It wasn't until you heard all these voices talking, and then you heard Tom Baker, and I went, oh my God, that's so cool, because now it's the four of them. It's real. Because even though Tom has done some audios with Big Finish, and he's doing stories, this is the first time we're going to hear Tom with all of them, with the exception of Dimension of Time. They're all going to be together, and there's going to be some sort of interaction. And there was only one clip of one of the classic doctors, and it obviously is audio that's pulled from somewhere. There's no way you can do that. But I got that little chill moment, too, because I heard Patrick Troughton's voice, too. So I'm looking so forward to it, and it's going to be so much fun. Really quick, because we've gone really super long here, let's talk about the last thing we did officially, which was
the classic companions panel upstairs with Daphne Ashbrook.
All of them were companions except for that.
Well, yeah, Michael Jaston was there. He was the Valyard. Debbie Watling, Ed Fraser-Hines, Peter Purvis, and Mark Strickson.
Daphne Ashbrook.
Yeah, I got Daphne
Ashbrook.
Okay, you
got her. Right?
I said her.
We used her first.
You went. I didn't zone in on.
She is officially now a friend of the show, Daphne Ashbrook. So
yes,
we put her first.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes. Well, she was first on the seating.
Right,
yeah, she was on the right side. That was amazing.
It was neat.
That was a really, really neat panel. And I mean, there's a part of me that's like, oh, I want to get up and ask a question, but I couldn't think of anything to say. We were kind of in the back anyway, but
It was just fun to hear the stories.
It was a lot of fun.
And the one thing I really liked, and I'm partial because they're my two favorites, Fraser-Hines and Mark Strickson both, we were talking about Big Finish, and they were doing, I mean, because you know their voices now, they're older and all that kind of stuff, but then, you know, Fraser starts talking about doing Jamie's voice again, and then he actually does Jamie's voice, and I was like, oh my gosh, yay! And, you know, how they perform, and Mark Strickson did the same thing with Turlough, and I was like, oh my gosh, they're actually here. I mean, I know that these guys, it's the characters. I saw their faces. They still pretty much look like themselves.
Yeah.
But when you see their voices, they're the characters.
I thought the same thing. You get a little bit of a chill because it's like, wow, it's like you finally
you see it.
The one lady, that Victoria,
Deborah Watling.
She even mentioned. She said, you know, hers was like 14 years later or something when she went back and did an audio venture for.
She talked about Downtime, which is actually a movie that she did. That's what she was talking about.
Yeah,
in fact, because she asked if we had seen that, and then they clued me in, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, Downtime, that's the one with, I think, the Briggs in that.
Mm-hmm. Caroline Jones.
Okay. Is that what she was talking about?
Yeah, so that's what she's talking about, is going back.
They did
ask about Big Finish, and then she talked about that.
But she was talking about doing Victoria's voice, and she said she was amazing how she was able to find her again and bring her out
right
and
away.
Just fell right into
right.
step with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Although I did think it was funny because she said, and he called I can't remember the producer's name, called her up and wanted to ask her if she wanted to do that. And she said, yeah, oh, absolutely, I'd love to do that. But, you know, where does this pick up? And he says, well, you know, you're going to play Victoria. And she said, I remembered I had left like 14 years ago, and when Victoria left, she was like 19 years old. So I said, I don't know how you're going to do this, but you're going to have to light it differently or put it in
the
dark.
She says, you're going to have to put me in the dark, dark.
And so then she says, that's why her scenes end up in like an underground area or a tunnel or whatever. I can't remember what she said.
The sewer,
that's right. She said because they you know, they cleverly did that. So yeah. She's not the age she was when she left.
So but none of those actors were. When you get that phone call, you have to say, yeah, but you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to film me at the Ritz-Carlton. You're going to have to film
there
me,
you,
at,
go.
You know, because producers apparently listen.
Apparently,
to you,
apparently they do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But the best, well, the whole thing was just great. But I think the best part and kind of the most heartwarming part was at the end with whoever it was asked the question, you know, what, you know, how do you feel that, you know, seeing the reception that Doctor Who's getting now compared to when you guys were, and then, and Daphne Ashbrook was great, and she gave her answer, and she was saying, he's like, you know what, I don't have to explain to people who I am now, because before when it was just the movie, she had to explain to people what Doctor Who was, and things like that, but, you know, just all of them, they went down the way and said, you know what, it's the fans that brought it back, and the fans, like, because you guys still loved it, and all this stuff. And like, even to me, someone who came to it a lot later, I'm like, you know, I get goosebumps when I hear something like that because
they recognize the fans and they appreciate it.
Yes.
I think that's the most important thing.
And the greatest thing, and I kind of got a little, you know, misty at the end when we're all applauding and it's over and all the fans stood up and gave him a standing ovation because God knows they deserve
it.
They
made the comment about they did not expect to see that many people when they announced you're opposite Freema, because Freema was in.
Oh yeah, they had Freema.
Yes. So I'm sure her room was packed, but then our room was very nearly packed.
Nearly filled.
The other big one.
Yeah. Well then, you know, in the panel, and then the stars up there at the stage, like the fans are all standing up, giving a big standing ovation, whooping, whatever, and then they stand up and applaud us. And that was just like, you know, crowning moment of heartwarming right there. It's like
I got misty at that moment, and I was kind of holding it in just because it was such a shared warmth that was going on. And I made the mistake of looking at Deborah Watling, who was like that. She had her hands over her mouth and was visibly tearing up, and I had to look away. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I could not look at her.
And then I just remember, because then after that, we went to dinner, went to Subway, which is another funny story, but not there. But anyway, but I still had on my fifth Doctor costume through this whole thing. And so we walked down the Subway, and we're getting our food and going through, and I'm going to pay, and there's a guy, he was like a pilot in the airport, he's got his uniform on, and he looks at me, and he's like, I got a question for you. And I'm like, yeah? Because I think, you know, oh my gosh, I'm in this, you know, I'm in this get-up, and he's going to think whatever.
Yeah,
he's
like, you're in L.A. So.
Yeah, well. And he's like, is there a schism between, well, he was saying, like, there's, like, a difference between Trekkers and Trekkies, and I don't know the difference, because I don't know Star Trek. But he's like, is there kind of a divide, the way there is with Star Trek, or with Trekkers and Trekkies, between fans of New Who and Classic Who?
Wow.
He asked me that question, and like, you know what, I honestly don't think so, because I came to the show through New Who, and I'm dressed up as the fifth Doctor, and I, you know, I've been telling people, like, Peter Davison is my Doctor, hands down. I mean, I love the new series. That's where I cut my teeth, and I got it, and I love it. But then I went back and did Classic Who, and I kind of feel like I've been with the show for so long, even though I really haven't. But I don't think that there is that divide. Now, some people may enjoy New Who more than they like, or they don't even give Classic Who a fair shake, or vice versa, whatever. But I don't think there is that. And I think that panel kind of proved that. And so it was just interesting that guy asked. I got that question after I'd just come out of that panel, too.
Yeah. That's from presumably somebody that wasn't even at the convention. That's kind of neat. So.
Yeah, and I mean, it looked like he just got off work from, you know, flying from.
Was it the guys that walked down to the hotel in front of us? And
No. He was a pilot. He was a pilot.
Oh, there was two pilots that passed us.
Oh, no, it wasn't those guys. He was an older guy. No, yeah, he was. Okay. And it was like when I was paying for my food. And I was like, that was an interesting question. And he was saying, like, oh, yeah, I'm just watching the new series. And
well, when I was standing in line for Freema for an hour and 15 minutes, you have nothing better to do than talk to people. And there was a guy that was behind me who was waiting in line, and we got to talk, and he said that he had, and him and his wife had actually gone to Star Trek conventions and got introduced to this convention, And he says, after coming to a Gallifrey convention, he'll never go to another Star Trek convention again. He said the difference between the people attending this kind of convention, the Gallifrey convention, is so much homier, so much personable, and the guest and everything. There's no difference between who they are and who we are versus a Star Trek convention.
I think a part of that, first of all, part of that is Galley, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of part of that, too, is it is the fans who kept this show alive, mm-hmm. who kept the flames burning, who come to Gallifrey year after year after year during the wilderness years when there wasn't anything going on, who have that such fond appreciation for what Doctor Who is, that I think that kind of is what helped permeates this whole environment. Because you and I felt it when we came last year.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter. I mean, there was a little bit, specifically at LobbyCon, that we were kind of odd men out because we didn't have a click.
Unfamiliar with it.
But it was just because we were unfamiliar with it. But that's really the only place that you get that. Everything else is just people are warm and friendly, and you're Who fans, so your fan is what Chip said in opening ceremonies. This is your con. This is your Gallifrey. Mm-hmm. This is your home.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of the whole thing.
But, all right. Well,
I think that's going to do it for
that's
us.
That's going to do yeah. it for this update, and we went a little long. So until next time, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Mel.
I'm Chrissy.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Toodaloo.
Be seeing ya.
Oh, you can't do that.
Keith's not here. Someone has to do it. I don't have one.
've been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.